first one is called The Prairie is on Fire. From afar, it looks like a diorama. Wisps of trees quiver like feathers over the hillside. Box-shaped houses fade from their rows. Little figures stand still on the porches and driveways as toy-like vehicles wait at the stoplights. The surrounding land is dotted with tractors. Their shovels rise and fall, digging ever deeper into the hills and causing the ground beneath to give way. All has become captive to a subliminal landscape as fissures in the earth creep across the plains. The town stops abruptly at a soaring edge, positioned above an expanse of caverns, the whole place sliding increasingly down a slope of jutting rock into the mines. Stripes of iron and magnesium blacken the incline as children sit on the rim of the abyss, throwing keepsakes into the darkness, rag dolls and Swiss Army knives, plastic figures tied to parachutes. It is only a matter of time before the town is swallowed up. Over the next 20 years, everything will be moved a few miles down the road, where a new city awaits to be built up from the ground. The houses will be demolished or rolled away on wheels. The famous church will be disassembled and put back together again, the villagers holding pieces of it in their hands as they head over the hill in a great procession into the distance. If there were a time-lapse sequence capturing the metamorphosis, everything would appear in upheaval and motion, like an opera set being put up and broken down. But in real time, here, everything seems still. A sense of waiting for something is tangible in the air. The villagers hold off on buying houses and having children. They wait to open businesses and resist the urge to redecorate, etc. The architects meet to discuss their designs, knowing the dilemma has exceeded structure and become existential. How can we determine the value of a house in a place that doesn't even exist, says one of them, suddenly feeling part of a utopian experiment. They hope to transfer as much of the old city as possible, but they can't move everything. Memories of the place cannot be translated. No surplus of precious metals can reinstate the benches where love was made in the parks, or the rooms of hospitals where babies were born, floating in towers of artificial light, soon to be absorbed into the dust of the caverns. It is summer. The town is close enough to the Arctic Circle to be in a state of perpetual daylight, echoing the constant darkness of the winters. The district only a cluster of roofs covered with snowfall most of the year. But now, in the heat, young girls look up at the moon in the middle of the day, only imagining the shadows it casts on their faces. In the new town, all the quandaries of youth will remain. There will still be a midnight sun, and the virgins will stand on the cliffs as they would in any place, still looking for the edge of something, wanting to begin. Next one is called The Onironaut and La Noviera. And La Noviera in Spanish means it's a young female bullfighter in training. And an Onironaut is a lucid dreamer. He wears an elaborate eye mask to bed, an expensive gadget he ordered from a late-night infomercial. The mask has electric symbols built into the padding, emitting light patterns programmed to illuminate his dreams. He lies there now with the apparatus strapped to his face, the buttons glowing in a succession of red lights that move over his eyes like radioactive ants. The man hasn't been sleeping lately, living in a house with the woman he loves, unable to speak to her. He dreams he doesn't live with her anymore, that he's back in his old cave that used to be his own, where he could sleep all day without another set of feet stepping out of bed beside him or a single crack of light falling into the room. The world he dreams of isn't fantastic. It is simply a world the woman isn't in. A different language is spoken there. No one has wives or houses or jobs. There are taxis everywhere, gold and red ones, shooting through the avenues like scarabs in the moonlight. There is never a need to go to the market or to spend long hours in drab rooms under fluorescent lighting. It is always springtime in the dream. As the man sleeps, the woman wanders the rooms of the house, a gray interior, the television playing on mute all winter. She beats the rugs and preheats the oven. She dusts the books on the man's shelves. What he dreams of in life is unclear to her, where he would rather be, what draws him away from her. As she pulls open a drawer of his desk, the vase of flowers falls from the mantel. A bull gallops through the house, breaking through the floorboards and shaking the entire building. Spears hang from the animal's side, colorful feathers at the ends of them dripping with blood. The woman dresses herself quickly, stepping into a pair of high-waisted pants and a sequined bolero with gold-tasseled shoulder pads. She clips her hair back and fastens a thin black tie around her neck. From the screeching drawer of her old commode, she pulls out a large square of magnificent red cloth. Out on the docks, old subway cars are being dumped into the sea. An entire barge is loaded up with them and sailed out over the ocean, as one by one each broken unit is tossed over the side to a watery grave. Over time, every surface of the train cars will be covered in life, restoring areas of water that have been damaged by human activity. In a year or 10 years, the rust will be grown over with coral and forests of seagrass, as schools of rainbow fish course through the sunken cavities. Miles inland, the woman stands in the street, hands shaking from the cuffs of her costume, glittering in the sunlight, as she looks up at the bedroom window of the house. "Sleep," she says, turning away, straightening her tie with bloody fingers. She walks to the station and boards a train. It shuttles through the underground tunnels, grazing by other trains on parallel tracks, with parallel people in the yellow squares of the windows. The same forlorn faces look up from their books in the other trains. The same ragged scenes are illuminated in the darkness, passing in panels like hopper paintings on reels of film. The man likes it when this happens. He always remarks upon it when they take the train together. Now the woman rides alone. She gazes before her as the train stops between two stations, the doors sliding open to empty black space. No platform visible or signage indicating the train's whereabouts. Back at the house, in the world the man dreams of, he finds the same books strewn open on the sidewalks, the pages filled with the same adventures he thinks he will never have. Certainly not in the world the woman is awakened. When the man wakes up, his house is empty. In the dining room, the bull's heart sits on a crystal platter, a steak knife and a bib arranged beside it. The woman steps out into the darkness. When the doors close behind her, the train keeps moving. "What stop was that?" a passenger calls out in jest. So some of these stories are sort of centered around post-apocalyptic landscapes, and some sort of have more to do with being in relationships, which, as it turns out, is not that different. So I'm going to give you two for two on that. This next one is called Empty Chairs. They sit in the casino, watching the heat swirl through the parched landscape around them. There is nothing for miles but the wind, a yellow distance, marked by emptiness and thought. Birds circle the casino like shards of debris flying from a sunken house. Slot machines and craps tables sag to the left, as if sliding into the ocean. A square of faded tin swings above the door, a drawer of expired money hanging open beside it. The floor is caked with the dust of past visitors, feet that have walked in gold and mud, wildcats who have tiptoed past the doors of royal cages, drifters who have pushed their captive wives down mountainsides. Flanked by the fake marble columns of the Great Hall, men sit at the poker tables, without any cards, frozen in pantomime as though they were still playing, glaring at each other and imagining the game in their hands. The only entertainment is a child in a long, dirty nightgown, humming bits of show tunes and flitting about the room, occasionally slow dancing with an emaciated cowboy, now reduced to lassoing empty chairs. Nevertheless, the last of the hot tempest still blows outside. The birds cling to the rooftops, absorbing all sound, migrating with the darkness that follows the heat. At dusk, the child is the one to light the candelabras. She gathers up the feathers that blow in the door and puts them in the vases on each table, then stands as a black silhouette in the doorway, looking out at the distance like she's seen in the movies, letting the wind toss through her nightgown, and still not catching sight of a single flowering branch. But just as all color fades from the picture, finally comes the signal in the dark, a flash of light on the lost horizon, wavering at the edge of so many plain towns. A charismatic youth guides his horse down an empty road, eyes aglow as he nears the casino, prosthetic legs creaking like armor through the sand. Black and white televisions begin to flicker with faint streaks of color. A snake sheds its skin and slithers into a hole. The girl in the nightgown drags the back of her hand across her forehead. When he reaches the casino, the man opens his briefcase on the table, illuminating the place with the vision of a beautiful lake jumping with trout. And this is the last one. It's called The People in the Hotel. A man lies in bed, staring up at the ceiling, trying to think of a subject for a poem. An hour passes, and all that has occurred to him is that a patch of wall around the light fixture needs a new coat of paint. A woman lies beside him, smoking a cigarette. She has become his logorrhaic muse, buzzing through the walls of their hotel room with her chatter. But today she is remarkably tame, quiet as a stone chimera, bending her elbow to lean her chin upon her hand. Sunlight pours in through the windows at the foot of the bed as someone takes a photograph of them, a single snapshot captured in black and white. The photographer marks all his pictures with handwritten captions. Later, he will scribble the words, "Getting to know Hubert," on the back of this one. They have spent the day malingering in the bathtub and up against the wall, clinging to each other at the edge of the bed. Finally, the woman speaks. "This room is like a coffin," she says. "Whenever they are away from each other, they meet in the water lily room of the museum." The woman wears a dress that blends into the paintings, a fabric of blurred flowers floating in a blue-green landscape, so that when he looks for her, he cannot find her right away. Sometimes they rendezvous in the Egyptian wing, and she lays herself in the claws of the Sphinx. "If you're famous, you can get away with anything," the man said to her once, as she stood at the window. She does pliés in the mornings, holding onto the railing of the balcony, wrapping herself in the curtains as though she were a bride. She knows the two of them will never marry or have children or live in a house, and in that regard she will stay a child forever, playing dress-up in the evenings, imagining herself dancing before a crowd, holding a doll to her chest when everyone has gone. The photographer goes home and develops the negatives in a drawer of his desk, a strange red glow emanating from it and lighting up the room. He clips other pictures on the line to dry, one showing two men in coats kissing in front of a theater, Tarzan the Ape Man, the Wild One, and the Stranger in glittering letters on the marquee behind them. "What a wonderful panorama we might have produced," he says, looking at the image and wishing he were just a few years older. Whatever might change in them, the man and woman are happy where they lie, on this day, in this moment, almost touching, staring upward and wanting different things, a spirit captured in the photograph, to be hung on the walls of a gray gallery for years. Young girls will stop in to look at it, wandering the city alone, longing to be like the people in the picture. It has been a hot day, overcast, with a heaviness in the air. The man in bed still can't think of anything. He shoots his gun out the window at a passing cloud, and a torrent of rain falls down upon them. Love is impossible, and yet we love. Thank you.